Do you ever hear the voice of spirit? Literally? I do. Indeed, spirit does speak to us a lot. It's heard as there is sufficient attentiveness and substance to be aware of it. And intentionality, because the voice can easily be drowned out by mental chatter, stuff rattling around in consciousness, muffling and obscuring our connection to the profound reality that speaks to all of us. A few days ago, I was driving to a meeting and I had the radio tuned to the Denver classical station. And Aaron Copland's stirring Fanfare for the Common Man started playing. I didn't think too much about it at first, just simply took it in and remembered how much I appreciated its simplicity and heroic grandeur. Also, on the previous evening, I had started looking around for music for today's gathering, but hadn't really found anything that seemed to fit. But there in the car, listening to Copland's Fanfare, it became immediately clear, that's it. Here's our Sunday music. We'll get there. Or at least part of it. So yeah, here was the voice of spirit coming right at me. In this case, playing on the radio. Spirit speaks in many voices and makes itself known in often intriguing ways. These days, I figure it's best to simply be prepared for it. Even expect it, and not be blasé and carelessly indifferent about what's coming my way. There's incredible richness in our worlds. It's good to pay attention. Anyway, let's take a listen to this piece, Fanfare for the Common Man. And hopefully Zoom does it justice. Switch over here. Get my microphone back on there. Quite powerful. Aaron Copland wrote this in 1942 during World War II. It was commissioned as part of a series of fanfares to boost American morale during the war. And the title was suggested by conductor Eugene Goossens in honor of the common man's role in the war effort, inspired by a speech by then Vice President Henry A. Wallace. Patriotism aside, I think the common man is a useful image that everyone, regardless of their rank, role, or position, rich or poor, has a part to play in the greater whole. And there is collective power as individuals freely offer their all in service to a higher cause. Listening to the piece today, I still appreciate its original intent, but my feeling now is that something else, much larger, more sweeping and encompassing, is what really is going on. To my ears, what is portrayed is the magnificence and grandeur of creation itself. The awe-inspiring raw power and sheer magnitude of the forces at work throughout the universe. Here expressed through the thundering percussion and crashing cymbals. And coming through all the pyrotechnics and musical drama, we hear what is back of it all, the tone, that crystal clear vibration represented by the fanfare's main theme, first presenting itself as a single lone trumpet. And even though this is only a single instrument, its clarity and purity of tone resonates far and wide, inspiring everything within earshot to come into vibrational alignment, resulting in a fusion of being and form. And it's this unity of heaven and earth, the act of being incorporated. This is the essence and origin of true agreement. As an aside, we can take note that if such agreement, this union, is not the reality in ourselves, internally speaking. We really have nothing to bring to the table when working with others. As agreement is present in individuals, it then sets the stage for collective agreement to occur. In the fanfare, following the playing of the lone trumpet, we see this represented as the main theme. It's now, the main theme is now taken up by the full brass ensemble, symbolizing agreement and harmony between instruments. And the piece continues to build in intensity and finally reaches a powerful climax with all instruments playing fortissimo, a conjoined collective outpouring, resulting in a powerful release of unified radiation. For sure, agreement doesn't occur from the bottom up. It's not about a bunch of folks coming together, smoothing over their differences, hoping they'll get along, and somehow something creative will come of it. No, it's actually the reverse. Collective creative action occurs top down. In other words, we first must come into alignment with that which emanates from above, allowing a factual state of internal agreement to be present at the level of the individual. As this is done, we then are in position to work together as friends and collaborators in all manner of creative activity. We are co-creators, after all, and thus our instruments ourselves, conduits through which spirit can speak in ways unique, intriguing, and beyond imagination. It's been quite fun working together with Larry this past week in preparation for this morning. We've known each other for many years. And it's lovely to have this opportunity to share genuine agreement together as men. Larry, what say the voice of spirit through you?
Sanford is a man for whom I have great respect. He and I are providing a focus, two men in agreement, focused in what is higher. And as all of you agree with this focus, more power has the opportunity to move through our collective agreement. In the world, agreement isn't known. Disagreement is known. Whether you look at Congress or you go to your local homeowners association meeting or gathering with a few people, somebody is coming in with an agenda. There are egos involved, sometimes bruised, different viewpoints, different political and religious stances that people would take, and very little gets done. Very little power can move because everyone is working at cross currents. I was relating this to sports. I watched our Denver Nuggets basketball team play the Los Angeles Lakers last night, where they have LeBron James and other stars. And interestingly, the Denver team won the national championship last year for basketball, for professional basketball. There are teams that have more superstars, but so often these great players with the large egos are out for themselves. How many points can I score? How good can I look tonight? And they would say, oh, we want to win the game and I'm doing everything, all the right things. But there's no flow of agreement. As it turns out, the Denver Nuggets may not have the star power some of the other teams have, although they have very good players. But they all bought into an agreement on something higher, which at that level is winning a championship. They let their egos go. And it didn't matter to them who was scoring points. If one player had a hot hand one night, give him the ball. Let him keep shooting. If it's another player, give it to him. Let him keep shooting and making points. And their best player is known not so much for scoring, which he can do, but for passing to other players, setting up plays to let them look good and score points. And on that basis, playing as a unit in agreement, selflessly, they're beating everybody, including the teams with the pack of the superstars. So that says something about agreement. What we could do if we, humanity, realized that we are actually one team with a divine purpose, and let go of all our preconditions and our concepts, put our trust in the one who leads this team, power would move. Great power. Who knows what would be possible if we truly came into agreement as one body of humanity. I've recently been giving thought to how we live our lives. How do we make decisions? How do we behave? We have to decide so many things in the course of each day. What are we going to have for lunch? Who am I going to talk to? How will I respond to an email? Thousand little things all day long. Well, we get input from our senses, data from the five traditional senses, and very useful. We have eyesight. If we see an obstacle in our path, we don't have to stumble over it and injure ourselves. We can walk around it. And if we leave food out too long and lift up a lid on a container and it smells bad, well, we're warned away from consuming it. Of course, as some of us are aging, our senses may not work as well as they once did. But for the most part, they work enough, well enough. We can take in that information about the world around us and use our minds and feeling realm to come to a decision and act on it. When I first began the spiritual journey toward maturity, as is true, I'm sure, for all of you, I was told that there's something beyond the traditional five senses. I said, oh, what is that? And I was told, you can actually sense an atmosphere in a place or in people. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. That sounds good to me. How come I never heard about it before? My parents never told me about it. Teachers never mentioned it, but sounds like something really important. And I learned that it isn't that easy to perceive atmosphere, especially if one's mind is in turmoil and one's emotions are going this way and that way. And so, like all of you, I embarked on a series of bringing my human capacities to a place of rest. The first step is patience, as we know. And I had the good fortune at that time of driving a taxi cab in New York City. That was my job. And what a wonderful place to learn patience. Being in a traffic tie-up with the passenger in the back seat saying, "Hey, buddy, I need to get to LaGuardia Airport in 20 minutes or I'm going to miss my flight." And being able to turn around and say, "Sir, I can't move any faster than the traffic. I'll get you there as quickly as I can." Patience relates to the physical aspects of our world. And in learning patience, one has to let go of one's expectations. Things are moving the way they're moving. How can I deal with it as it is? That's learning patience. And then came tranquility. Okay, my thoughts are going this way and that way, and I have all these ideas. But tranquility is something else. It's letting the mental facilities come to rest. And again, in that taxi cab with all the horns blaring and so much going around, I discovered serenity. I just let go, let it all come to rest. And in that sense of tranquility, I felt an expansiveness and a lightness. Oh, this is something different. And beyond that, there are other levels towards spiritual maturity. An important one is blessing. And this puts things in a different focus because so often all of us are thinking about ourselves and how things affect us. But to be a blessing means you're turning this around and the energy is moving outward. How can I help? How can I be of service? This changes things around. Having done this, and had some experience with this. One day, a friend came over, and I suddenly felt this heaviness, very uncomfortable. And I thought at the time, wow, I was feeling okay, and now I feel this clammy, uncomfortable feeling. And then when he left, that feeling disappeared. And the light went on. I thought, aha, I was feeling his atmosphere. That wasn't me. And in that moment, I realized that in order to sense atmosphere, you have to be still in yourself. You have to have a baseline. And then when something changes, if you hold true to that baseline of who you are, you can sense the change, sense anxiety, sense whatever it is, and create a field. It may just be driving along in an automobile, you sense, whoa, something doesn't feel right. Maybe I need to slow down until things settle down vibrationally. Well, this is great. This is extra input that we have. And we learn that, like the quantum world, distance doesn't matter. We can sense atmosphere. And furthermore, we can work in that atmosphere and the whole world of attunement opens up. And one discovers it's something real. I can be a blessing in a different way. Tremendous, tremendous. One may think, aha, I've got it now. I have more information to make good decisions and I'm here to serve and I'm a good person, and I understand things spiritually. I don't need to do anything more. I got it. Well, no, you don't. Actually, you're just higher up on the tree of human nature a little bit. But there is an essential step, maybe the biggest step, that's missing. If we think about how we make decisions, how many factors do you think that the human mind and heart can encompass relative to anything we're doing? Not many. I was going to say maybe 1%, but I think that's being very generous. We've heard how the flapping of a butterfly's wings can affect the weather system on the other side of the planet. Well, that may sound fanciful, but whatever we do has ramifications. And these ramifications have further ramifications. The smallest action sets something in motion, which we aren't likely to be aware of, which sets something else in motion, and onward and onward and onward it goes. Well, one could say, okay, I don't really understand all the factors that are emerging from any action I'm going to take. Well, then how do I know what to do? I've got my senses and I can appreciate atmosphere, but it's not enough. Well, to comprehend this, we need to take a step back and look at a bigger picture. You may recall in the story of creation, as it's told in Genesis, on the second creative day, God created a firmament which separated the waters above and the waters below. Few people have understood what that meant. I suppose this could be seen at different levels, and maybe in the true state, there really were waters above and waters below, physical representation of what was being spoken of. Not the case now in the world as it is. But we know that water is a symbol of truth. So there is a firmament or an atmosphere which is between the truth above and the truth below. Truth emerges from love and has a design. So another way to look at it is that there is a reality above and a reality below. Well, as human beings, we're well designed to live in this reality, this world of time and space. There's another higher reality, the waters above, the truth above, which we aren't designed to comprehend. But we would presume that whatever form beings take in this higher reality is well suited to handle the factors in that reality. Now, that reality has an overview of all of the factors that come to focus in our world. And in the true design, the firmament wasn't meant to separate and divide the waters above from the waters below, but to connect them, to be a connecting medium, so that it's all one thing. They're just parts of one thing, the way a hand and a foot are all part of one body. So, if we are to be mature, angelic men and women, fully present on earth, it can only happen when we are the means of connecting this higher level of reality, of truth, with the truth expressed in our own world. So, how does this happen? Seems to be almost unknown in the world as it is. It can happen when there is the substance of living that's generated from us because we know patience and tranquility and our blessing and so on and so forth. The kind of building blocks of spiritual maturity, you might say, where there's stillness and the radiation of life moving through us, substance is generated that rises up in this firmament to meet what's coming down in the firmament from above, and a connection can be made. If that connection isn't made, then the two are separated. And one doesn't know what the overview of this higher state is. God called the firmament heaven. It is heaven that conveys the correct and optimal spiritual direction for our living in everything we say and everything we do. But the human view is, oh, I've got this information. I've got my views on things. I don't need you, God. I've got it. I've got it. I can make decisions. Of course, they're different than my neighbor's decisions. He's got his own viewpoint. And we may be at loggerheads about it, but I've got it. I don't need your view of all the factors that come to focus. Here's an analogy to drive this point home, if I may. Give you a modern analogy. Imagine, if you will, an accountant who drives his new electric vehicle home and parks it in his garage. And he decides, I need a home charging station. I have only 110 volts that come into the house, but I need a 220 volt charging station for my new electric vehicle. So I'm going to do it. I've got a bunch of wire laying around, and there is an electrical panel in the wall, and I'm going to do it. He doesn't know anything about how electrical circuits work or that one needs to shut off the electrical power to the area he's working on, and is ready to start sticking wires in here and there. Now, it could be pretty dangerous and pretty foolish. Now imagine if just at that time, his neighbor walks by who's a licensed electrician. And he says, hey, buddy, can I give you a hand with that? And the homeowner says, nah, I got it. I got it. I'm good. I don't need your help, your expertise. Foolish, silly, isn't it? Help was available to do the job right. This is the view of human beings saying to God, I've got it. I don't need a larger understanding of what I'm doing in my life and how it relates to everything else that's going on in the world and in the cosmos. I got it. That's eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's shutting God out from the decision-making process, from how one lives one's life. We were meant to eat of a different tree, to use that analogy, the tree of life, one with God. So, how does this work? Sanford gave us a clue. He said he knew that he needed to come up with music for today. He didn't know what it was. And on the radio came this piece by Copeland, and it was just the right thing to play this morning. That's how it works. Remember when Christina spoke a few weeks ago about concern over financial difficulties with her employment, and she stayed up during the night and thought about it, didn't come to any conclusion. But the next day, some possible solutions emerged through her coworkers. Maybe that wasn't the final answer. Maybe that just moved them a step in a different direction from which something else could be seen that wouldn't have been seen had they not taken the first step. Who knows how things work out? But these are examples of what I think of as divine alchemy. When we are still in ourselves, and when we are clear, and we've generated the substance of connection, we can bring to focus the factors in our world and let them go. Let them ascend. That's all we need to do. We don't need to try to untie these Gordian knots bit by bit. Bring the factors in our world to focus and offer them up. And something will come down one way or another to let us find the way forward that fits. This is the way things are meant to work. I'm sure we've all had experience of having a problem, not seeing a solution, going to sleep, waking up in the morning, and suddenly we see it more clearly, and there's an answer. And people say, oh, well, your subconscious did the work for you during the night. Well, maybe it did. But maybe there were other factors too. When the mind was still, something came down from above, at least to the extent that a solution came into view. So, if we are to be fully present on Earth, we can't say, I got it, God. I don't need you. My human capacities are enough to handle whatever comes my way. They're not. They're insufficient. And on that basis, all that's known is a lack of agreement, and nothing ever gets done. And whatever is done is probably destructive. But when we are open, when we are completely naked, innocent, unstructured, with no concept about how things need to work out, and lift up the factors in our world, present them upward, whatever that reality is that is represented by the waters above, has an overview and can let something flow down through heaven into our human capacities so that we know what the right thing to do is. And if we don't try to bend it this way or that way, but just move with the flow that's coming into our heart and mind and trust in that above anything else, including what other people tell us or what we think is supposed to happen, but just let that be expressed in our living, we'll find that it is the perfect thing to do at the perfect time. We'll find that love is expressed through us into the world. Further, in consciousness, we find that we aren't here separate from what's above, but it's all one thing. In consciousness, we're connected and one with everything. Not separate. It's all part of one very vast creation. How wonderful that is. In closing, Joyce used a word the other day in a conversation we were having, which stuck with me. That word is light-hearted. That describes who we are. That describes the nature of our presence. Lighthearted. It's easy. Living is meant to be easy because we aren't simply relying on our human capacities, but letting something flow from above through us, as Sanford was alluding to before. And I love the word light because it has two meanings. It means not heavy, that light, but it also means the absence of darkness, illumination. We are meant to be light-filled beings, expressing light radiantly into the world. That is who we are. Light-hearted, loving beings, expressing the fullness of the Creator through our human capacities, into our circumstances, no matter what shape they are. And sometimes the circumstances are uncomfortable and difficult. That's okay. They are the way they are. Traffic may not be moving. Well, that's the way it is. I can be patient. I can be serene. I can offer a blessing. I can let God express through me into the world as a divine man and as a divine woman. And when there are others who are doing the same, in agreement, that is powerful. That is special. And we discover we are friends. We've always been friends. We always will be friends. For we are one. That's the way it is. We have a few minutes left. If others wish to join in the conversation, please do.
Larry and Sanford, it is just such a joy to be with you and everyone here in agreement. In agreement for why we came here on Earth, in agreement to let light permeate everything. And it seems to me, from my experience, we become more and more humble about that. There is immense humility to simply let spirit take over, to yield and say, take it. I'm with you. I'll follow. And when we do that, the things that work out are just miraculous. And we stand and give great thanks for the miracles that God works when we allow that. You mentioned lightheartedness and love. And I honestly think that as we love the people we're with, whatever's going on with them, whatever they might have said, it doesn't really matter. If we just let love radiate without concern for results, everything works according to the divine plan. And I just loved sharing this time with both of you and with everyone. And thank you so much for your beautiful focus always and your friendship.
It's interesting, Larry, that Sanford played that piece as an inspiration to the troops. Now, whether it's the troops or a basketball team or those online, we are in spiritual agreement with you. Thank you.
Okay, Larry and Sanford. Oh, okay. I'll come over here in front of the camera. I just love the tone of our experience this morning because it's lighting up the network. It's all about lighting up the network. It's all over the world. And when one sees that light coming through another, maybe somebody you just meeting in a restaurant and you talk to them about some of their aspirations of what life is and what they're looking for, and you see that spark in them and you offer them that encouragement. You can do this. You can do this. You don't have to think you can't. It's just the magic of life, because life is magical. How are we going to change the world if not to demonstrate another way forward? Mm-hmm. So I'm just so delighted. Beautiful opening, Sanford, with the music. And Larry, your animation. It's just great. Thank you.
In our world, there's so much concern about being intelligent. Data has become the big thing. The more data we can put together, the more we can cover ourselves in it, the more we can dive into it, the more intelligent we will be and the more successful we will be somehow. And what you've articulated just totally flies in the face of that. You have articulated what it means to truly be intelligent. Since I retired, a lot of people ask me, well, what are you doing now? And I say, well, I'm an intelligent life detective. And I'm really concerned about what intelligence really is. And this is a great way with people, I find, to touch on exactly what you're saying. That this crossover point is where we're designed to be. And what an incredible place to be. I just love so much what you've brought, and I really appreciate both of you men in agreement. It's a powerful thing. Thank you.
Larry, exercising these qualities of spirit that you outlined on a consistent basis, moment by moment, one does begin to hear that still small voice that Sanford referred to. And it becomes stronger and as a voice of many waters. And I think that's because there are many people, all of us included, who are living in this spiritual expression. This is divine decision-making, and this is substance is generated, there's a reservoir of it. And from that reservoir, there is so much rich experience. That's the substance that doesn't dissipate. We can take ourselves out of that, but that substance doesn't dissipate. It is. I so much appreciate both of you in bringing these factors forward. And another phrase that comes to mind is, let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. We know where we live, where we came from, and what we're here to do, and how we are to do it. Thank you.
There is something about the phrase, the common man, that rests in my heart. The word common is not something that anyone really strives for, I wouldn't think. In our minds, we want to be better than common. But the force of the common man is the force that changes things. The common brain is perhaps the uneducated brain, but the thinking that comes through a mind that is dedicated to a higher reality is the thinking that does the job. And it doesn't have to be educated. It doesn't have to be full of wonderful ideas or what happened in the past or what didn't happen in the past. That mind is now. And that mind has the ability, if it's used properly, to change everything in one's world in the living moment. Last night, I was listening to a service by Eugen, and he was talking about the moment of now and the purpose of now. And I looked up from my screen and I saw a double rainbow over all the buildings in downtown Vancouver, a double rainbow. And I thought, no common mind did that, or no great mind, or no educated mind. This is God's work we're doing. And the way we do it is let our mind be freed up into that consciousness. And that consciousness never, never thinks another person should be different than they are. Everything truly is all right. Let not your heart be troubled. And don't be telling other people what they should be doing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think we did some good work today. Thank you, Larry. Pleasure to collaborate in agreement. I also was thinking about the title, Fanfare for the Common Man, that word common. And another definition of common is widespread. And I think there's rejoicing as the state of man becomes more common, becomes more widespread, where the reality of heaven and earth are one. And in that state, our hearts are not troubled, and we can relax and allow the power that's present everywhere to come through us and come through the body to allow his work to be done. So wonderful to be together. I do have one final piece of music I'd like to play. It's another fanfare, this one written by John Williams. And speaking of sports, well, I don't know if this is a sport, but this was the fanfare he wrote for the Los Angeles Olympics back in the 80s. I think you might recognize this. So I'm going to play this music now.
Glorious.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Beautiful.
Goodbye, all.
Bye.